Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello and welcome to today's podcast. In this podcast, we have the honor and privilege of interviewing Mr. Taylor Hersom. He is the CISO of Third Rock. They're a leading cybersecurity company based in Austin, Texas. Taylor, thank you for your time and welcome aboard our show.
Thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here.
Thank you. Now, we looked up your bio, and you seem to have a very deep and rich background in cybersecurity. I mean, we didn't do any, like, background checks or anything, but we looked you up on LinkedIn. We kind of did some Google snooping, looked you up on your website. You know, I think one of your colleagues, I think Kathleen, sent over a press release about your background and everything, too. It's very, very impressive. So tell me, honey, how did you get started in cyber, and how did you end up being the CISO of Third Rock?
Oh, thank you for the kind words. Yes, so in terms of cybersecurity, I actually started at Deloitte, one of the big four accounting firms, back when I graduated college, and was there for a number of years. I started in the external audit space related to IT systems and financial audits, and then I transitioned into compliance and cybersecurity right when cybersecurity started to become a big talking point for the firm. And so I had this unique opportunity to kind of dive into cybersecurity for some Fortune 500 companies in the life sciences and healthcare space, mostly on the West Coast, and then was also able to help kind of build up the cybersecurity internal audit branch in Deloitte. All I had to do was sell my soul. So then I transitioned into a chief security officer role at a consulting firm in Austin, Texas. Worked on building out a practice both internally and externally for clients, and then have been really closely connected with Third Rock and the Cyber Compass crew, and was able to jump in and actually be a formal member and teammate with the Third Rock / Cyber Compass crew. And I haven't looked back since. I've been it's awesome to be in the cybersecurity space in 2020.
Awesome. Now, is Third Rock a company that you've helped create? Are you kind of like one of the founding members? Or?
No. So some great gentlemen, far smarter than myself, ladies and gentlemen, started the Third Rock branch. Third Rock's been around for a number of years, and it's been essentially a professional services firm in the cybersecurity space. And what they did early on is the founders are all very passionate about automation and streamlining workflows. And so they really took that train of thought and applied it towards cybersecurity specifically. And they spun up what is now a successful SaaS application called Cyber Compass. And so I've had the honor of knowing them for years now. But I actually just started this year as a formal team member. So can't take the credit for spinning it up. They've done an amazing job of building up professional services and technology in the cybersecurity space. And I'm along for the ride.
Well, congratulations for starting out on a new role there. Now,
I want to
ask you a question here. The name Third Rock, I was kind of wondering, how did you get that name for a cybersecurity company? What's the meaning behind it?
I am going to butcher this, so probably actually pass that to the CEO, Robert Phelps, who is also on this podcast.
Robert, please introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Robert Phelps. I'm the CEO of Third Rock and actually the original founder. So Third Rock's gone through several iterations, I guess you'd say. We started in 1995 as a web application firm for large Fortune 50s. So we weren't doing websites, we were doing web applications inside those companies. And we were looking for a company that, take the Kodak concept or the Xerox concept. So we were looking for a company name that didn't speak about what we did, but the World Wide Web was huge at the time. So Third Rock was the earth, the world, and so we picked that name. And it's actually worked really well ever since. And then, as Taylor said, we are really workflow automation experts. And we've been that since 1995. We've been involved with cybersecurity since 1995. And so we just got serious in the last 7 years and merged those together.
Excellent. Wow. Okay. Now, Does Third Rock have a presence in other countries as well, too? And how long has Third Rock been in business?
So I'll answer that and then pass it back to you here in a minute. Sounds like. So we started in 1995. Started in 1995. Really got started with compliance and cybersecurity in 2011 and then serious in 2013. That's when we started really designing and architecting what would become Cyber Compass. And Cyber Compass, I believe, the first rollout was early or mid-2015. So it's been around over 5 years. And we do have a presence. We have done work for clients in the Pacific Rim, Europe, and Canada. So we are familiar with cybersecurity, privacy, compliance in those countries.
Okay. Now now let's do a deeper dive into Cyber Compass. Now, we thought it was very neat to take on risk management into the cloud space, or what's known as a software as a service space or SaaS offering. Can you talk about about Cyber Compass? Now, is this like your flagship product service, I'm assuming, Third Rock?
It is, yes. So Cyber Compass, the vision behind that product is that we saw this need in the cybersecurity space, especially for SMBs, but all the way up to enterprise, where folks are investing all this money into security and data privacy, and yet they don't even focus on the basics. They're so enamored by the latest and greatest AI technologies and machine learning capabilities and whatnot, and they forget that in order to go on any sort of journey, to plan out anything for your company, you need to be able to have a guide of some sort. You need to have a map, you need to have a compass, you need to be able to know where you're going and why you're going that direction. And so we felt like all these companies were focusing on the cybersecurity elements that were, forgive my term, but sexy, and we wanted to go back to the basics and really help companies understand exactly what they need to do in terms of cybersecurity and compliance and do it without having to pay an arm and a leg to the consulting firms of the world. And so one of the things, too, is I think it would be helpful to explain exactly what Cyber Compass does. But Cyber Compass is essentially an automated risk assessment solution that really streamlines the entire risk assessment approach for companies, no matter what industry they're in, what security best practices they have in place or do not, and what regulations they fall under. And so we've essentially created this way for them to navigate, similar to a compass, and allow them to understand exactly what risks are impacting their organization from across their entire IT environment, and then what to actually do about those risks. So we've built all these elements into helping to essentially handhold a customer through this process, and then also to be able to give them the resources they need to not only address the risk, but to also prove that they are addressing the risk. So I'm sure that you can agree with some of your past podcast hosts, there's always this element of having to prove your compliance or prove your security posture. And we live in a day and age now, more than ever, where you have to do that. And so we've provided that tool and those means in an easy, affordable SaaS solution.
Okay. Now, for those who are not familiar with the Cyber Compass brand, what can you give us your 3-second overview or 1 minute, 2 minutes, or whatever have you?
Of course. Yep. So Cyber Compass brand itself, Cyber Compass is a SaaS solution that really goes hand in hand with the Third Rock professional services. It allows us to conduct risk assessments for customers based on their industry, size of company, and a few other elements, and allows us to provide them not only a very comprehensive gauge of their current risk posture, but it also gives us the means to help them build a cybersecurity program that aligns with their business model, with their vision, and with the requirements that they have to uphold as it relates to cybersecurity and data privacy.
Okay. Now, in today's threat landscape, especially with COVID-19 being out there, there are a lot of regulations and frameworks, you know, blah, 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 best practices. We've heard of the CCPA, the California Consumer Privacy Act, if I have that correct, and then the GDPR. Could you just kind of elaborate that? How does Cyber Compass like navigate through all this, especially focusing on this CCPA and the GDPR? Because I've had a number of podcasts on that. I've had some clients ask me about it. You know, they're kind of fearful. Oh, am I going to get the, you know, am I going to be penalized or so forth? So how can Cyber Compass help a client navigate this? And will it help them come into compliance with these two mandates and, like, help them avoid any, like, audits or financial or receive financial penalties?
Yeah, you touched on such a great point in the cybersecurity industry in that we are just inundated with acronyms. So it is so hard for the average company to keep up with what regulations they have to uphold and what security best practices there are and when something new is released. It's so hard to navigate that. And this is one of the big reasons why I was such a fan of Cyber Compass when I was just a colleague of the founders, is that they built Cyber Compass to first and foremost be a very modular solution that could be customized based on the customer's unique needs. So you'll probably see a lot of vendors out there and they will advertise the latest and greatest of the NIST cybersecurity framework or ISO 27001. But if you pull back the lens on that and you do a deeper dive, you'll notice that those vendors oftentimes can only speak to those regulations and those frameworks. And that does not help the average customer. So we have customers that have to fall under all kinds of regulations. Maybe a healthcare organization 10 years ago only fell under HIPAA, but today they fall under HIPAA, they fall under GDPR, they fall under state-level data privacy regulations. And so Cyber Compass is built to be very modular. And so at the very beginning, we have our virtual CISO team sit down with the customer, figure out exactly what their business model is, where they operate, and also what their vision is for the company, and we help align an appropriate risk assessment based on that information. And so now the big point I want to point out is that because of that modular design, when we have these new regulations, you touched on a great one, CCPA kind of shook the world here a few months ago, it is very easy for us to actually build a CCPA-centric risk assessment, and we can cross-reference that assessment to, let's say, the NIST cybersecurity framework. And so now when we're having these interviews and we're doing these risk assessments, it's very catered to the customer, and they're not reinventing the wheel every time a new regulation comes out.
Okay, do you foresee any new regulations coming out here in the near future? Because I know as a content generator for for my company, we do content generation for the cyber industry. You know, I'm reading the news headlines day in, day out, reading, you know, articles and what. There is thought of perhaps having like another, you know, like how we have the Department of Homeland Security, which evolved after 9/11. There's been some talk, you know, just some static about like maybe having another department for cybersecurity where everything's centralized at the federal level and kind of transcends down to states. Now, there's some opposition to that because states kind of want to do their own thing. So what are your thoughts
right
on that?
You know, I think that we're getting to a point where finally the organizations and the state-level governments and the federal government are all taking data privacy very seriously. Unfortunately, COVID has exacerbated that and sped that process up, and it's kind of it was a necessary evil in getting us to shine a spotlight on how important data privacy is in the grand scheme of things. And so we actually foresee that there is going to be a federal mandate coming. I think that based on historics, it takes the government it takes them a while to get anything accomplished. And so it won't be in the next 3 months or anything like that. But I think in the next year or two, we're going to see a more federally mandated and enforced data privacy law. Now, that being said, as you touched upon, there's already the state level data privacy regulations and laws that are being passed. So it started as just simple mandates on what happens when you experience a breach and how quickly you have to report a breach to the government and to the clients that you serve that were in that breach. But so there's already that enforcement. And then now a lot of states, I think we're in the 20s now, that are either currently at or are currently enforced or have already passed data privacy laws that are even more stringent, that have a variety of requirements where you have to have an appropriate security program in place, not just a protocol for reporting a breach, for example.
Okay. Well, do you foresee like a Department of Cybersecurity coming up like DHS down the road here? I mean,
Say that question one more time, sorry.
Do you foresee, you know, like how we have a Department of Homeland Security, do you think there will be a Department of Cybersecurity, like a Department of Homeland Security, that's going to evolve from all these cyber threats that have been happening?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's already happening informally. And I wouldn't say informally, maybe just actually behind the curtain. So there are a variety of government mandates and government departments that focus on this. So you may have heard of the CMMC certification that's coming out, mandated by the federal government for all contractors that do business with the government. And what happens with that is it's the cybersecurity maturity model certification. And what it essentially is a certification process that every vendor has to go through before they can serve the government any sort of services or products. And so the government will determine what bucket you fall in on a scale from 1 to 5 in terms of the sensitivity and the type of service you provide. And they will require you to follow that mandate and go through a formal audit from a third party before you can continue with your contracts with the government. That's really taken the world by storm as well, because that was just announced. It was announced last year, but we thought that it would be delayed, and it just hasn't. It's kicking off in the second half of the year, and so you've got hundreds of thousands of companies out there that suddenly have to obtain certification, and this is enforced at the federal level.
Now, do you offer CMMC services? I've talked to a bunch of other, vendors on podcasts where they help clients or defense contractors achieve certification. Does Third Rock help individuals or businesses achieve that goal?
We do. We have a variety of consulting services around it. With CMMC in particular, it's very closely aligned with the NIST 171 and the NIST CSF frameworks. And so we already had a deep understanding. Our tool already supported that. So it was a natural transition for us to be able to offer advisory services around CMMC. But that being said, what we're seeing right now is that the government, and it's being led by Homeland, the government as a whole is kind of scrambling. They're kind of flying by the seat of their pants when it comes to CMMC, and there's been a lot of fluctuation. There's been a lot of changes. And so what we've been kind of doing is offering to help customers that really want to focus on it, but what we're seeing is most of the time customers are kind of waiting to see what happens. Now, that being said, we are getting a lot more, opportunity now, because there has been no changes to the launch date of CMMC, which is currently set for July 1st.
Okay, excellent. Okay, well, let's go down and drill down to your customer base. Who do you typically target? Is it the SMBs, large companies, Fortune 500, or perhaps maybe a mixed match of both of them?
Yes, it's a fantastic question. I think that what we have come to see, I can talk all day about the spaces that we play well in, but the beauty of being in cybersecurity is that it has become a relevant topic for literally every company. And that's for one reason solely, in that every company from the mom and pop cookie shop down the road to a Fortune 500 company, they are first and foremost data companies. They collect data on their customers, they collect data on their employees, on their vendors, and they have an obligation to protect that data. And so we have now expanded the Cyber Compass tool set to be able to take on all of these different regulations and best practices. And so what we're finding is that we've started landing clients across the entire spectrum of the business industry and the business landscape. However, the space that we love to play in, the space that we've had a lot of success in, has been the insurance community, so financial services and insurance, because they're highly regulated. We've also had a lot of success in healthcare, and then we're really gaining traction in the startup space. So startup, high growth, typically SaaS companies, very technology-centric, And so we're seeing a lot of traction in that space. And I want to say that, you know, that's in the SMB space, but I think you can agree that sometimes these startups very quickly become what some of us would determine to be mid to enterprise. So hopefully that kind of gives you a little bit of a spotlight into kind of the customers we serve.
Sure. Do you have any client testimonials or any case studies you'd like to elaborate a little bit more on the show?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So we have a couple different ones. So we've had some success in the healthcare space in conducting. We had an opportunity where a customer had unfortunately experienced a breach, and the breach had been reported, and they had to provide a variety of documentation to the OCR. So Health and Human Services, OCR is actually who enforces HIPAA regulations. And so they had to actually provide a risk assessment and a bunch of policies and procedures, and they had to do it in a very short time span. And so we actually got the opportunity because the other vendor bids were not able to execute on such a short timeline. The average risk assessment in the U.S. right now takes between 6 and 8 weeks. Our average risk assessment, we've done risk assessments in as little as a week, but typically in the 2 to 3 week range. And for this particular engagement, we were able to execute on their timeline and get a formal report back to OCR, and they actually dropped the fine that was expected to be given. And so that was a big turning point for the company and for just the vision of the company. And so being able to do something like that in 7 days and be able to have such a successful win in that short time period was big for us. I will say the other success story that we have is we had the opportunity to really jump on the bandwagon for New York State's the NYC FRR 500, which is just the financial services and insurance regulation in the state of New York. We were able to actually offer Cyber Compass to hundreds and hundreds of brokers in the state of New York that had to suddenly adhere to the NYDFS requirement. And so we were able to create Cyber Compass in such a way that just by them going through the process, using our tool, following the remediation recommendations, they were actually able to largely comply with the entire regulation. So it really helped them get to the finish line in a really streamlined manner.
Okay, now, you kind of piqued my interest. Why does it traditionally take so long, like 6 to 8 weeks, 2 months almost, that you said to do a risk assessment? I would think that with all the automation kind of happening out there, it would happen just within a few days, you know, especially given, you know, the emergence of artificial intelligence to help with that process. Can you kind of say why, can you elaborate why it takes such a long time? Is it just because it's so exhaustive, or?
I think everyone has their theories, but because of my background at the Big Four and at other consulting firms, I think that my personal opinion and my strong thought on this is that, unfortunately, whether you're a mom-and-pop boutique consulting firm or you're the Big Four, your revenue model is entirely built on professional service hours, which means that for every hour you spend on a project, you get paid on. And therefore, because of that, it essentially stifles innovation. It doesn't incentivize you as the firm to do anything quickly or do anything efficiently because you're not getting paid as much and it cuts into your margins. And so very early on with this company, we took a different approach. We said, how can we combine professional services with technology to offer a more streamlined method for our customers to be able to achieve cybersecurity compliance and beyond? And so that's kind of my thought on why it unfortunately takes so long is because everything is just built to be manual from the get-go.
Well, on that side, do you guys do any work with artificial intelligence, like to help automate your processes or any other form of AI?
So right now, I mean, the way that Cyber Compass is built, it's one of the biggest clarifications we make because it's not the fault of the organization or the individuals that we're talking to, but this industry, cybersecurity industry, has become so inundated with terms and definitions, and so people can't agree on the difference between a vulnerability assessment and a risk assessment and a pen test. And so one of the big clarifications we make is that we're not trying to be those companies. We're not trying to, tie into every system that you have and provide you an audit log a mile long. What we're trying to do is augment the human element of any business, which will never go away. And that is that there are many things you have to do from a risk management perspective as a human that you have to make decisions on, from reviewing your users to having an appropriate password policy to conducting pen tests annually. You have all of these elements that the ability to attest that you're doing them itself cannot be automated, but you need to be able to attest that you are doing them. You need to be able to gauge your risk by going through those exercises and figuring out what you are and are not doing. And that's the space we're trying to play in. So thus far, the way the tool's been built has been to automate and streamline a lot of the workflow that goes into conducting a formal risk assessment with a consulting firm. That's a service that will never go away, unfortunately, because there's always, not unfortunately, it's actually fortunate for us, but it will never go away simply because there's always going to be a human factor to every IT environment. So our goal is to augment that human factor and to really streamline the entire approach.
Okay, excellent. Now, it seems like that Cyber Compass offers a plethora of other professional services, including the vCISO. Now, as we know, COVID has really, hamstrung, budgets for a lot of companies, monies are frozen, cash flow is frozen. So can you explain your vCISO services and how a company, especially an SMB, can benefit from that? And how does Cyber Compass kind of help with all that?
Oh, of course. I get so excited talking about virtual CISO specifically. So I think, again, back to my comment about COVID kind of speeding things up in the cybersecurity space, this is another element that we're seeing. We've been working in the virtual CISO space for years, and essentially what that is it is rather than expecting an SMB to go out and pay the average CISO salary, which is broached over 200K in the U.S. as of 2018, so I can't even imagine what it is now. Rather than them having to go and hire someone with full benefits and all the different elements that go into hiring FTE, we created what we call the virtual CISO. It's also known as the fractional CISO, where we can augment that position for you, where you can ramp up a consultant and a consulting team that allows you to fulfill that role. And so what we do is we greatly lower the price of how we offer this service. We've created essentially a subscription model for virtual CISOs. And what this gets the business is it gets them a variety of benefits. One, they're saving a ton of money. Two, they're not having an FTE that they potentially have to furlough or unemploy or go through that madness. The other cool thing that we have is that we have a team behind us that has all come from the consulting world. So we've got folks from IBM. We've got folks from Boeing. We've got folks from Deloitte. We have all this collective knowledge that we've been able to gather, and we've seen dozens and dozens of IT environments, which is a lot more valuable in our minds than hiring a CISO that's maybe seen a couple IT environments, that's been historically just a CISO for one environment at a time. So not only does that give us the collective knowledge to be able to offer, but it also allows us to use our resources that we've built up and streamline a lot of the workflow that goes into having a CISO. So rather than hiring a consulting firm for hundreds and hundreds of hours to build you a cybersecurity program, well, we can do that in a few hours because we have things like Cyber Compass. We have great policies and procedures. We have best practices and all sorts of guidelines that they can use and hit the ground running with. And so that's really our model and our vision for virtual CISO. It really goes hand in hand with what we're accomplishing with Cyber Compass, but we'd like to create essentially the cyborgs of virtual CISO, and that no CISO needs to operate in a silo. They need to have a team that they can rely on, and they need to have tools that they can use to streamline their workflow and offer more value to the customer.
Okay, excellent. Now, as a percentage of your business, do you get a lot of business from the vCISO service? Is that like one of your main bread and butters, or?
We do, yeah. So the virtual CISO has really been taking off in I'd say the last year. It's become more of a common term. It's become well known to customers. And I think that there are a large part of it is due to the fact that many customers are finally starting to take security seriously. But then when they try to go get a quote for what to hire a cybersecurity professional for, or what to get a consulting firm in for, they get scared away because of the price tag. And so now we're able to have those conversations. Our pricing is a bit non-traditional in how we do that subscription model. It's non-traditional in how we use a tool to augment our services. And so that brand awareness is spreading and allowing us to pick up a lot more virtual CISO. And what's cool about that is it allows us to build a heck of a portfolio with some incredible companies out there that all have these really awesome business visions of themselves, and we get to support that.
You know, have you ever had a scenario where a customer came to you and said, "Hey, Tony, I want to be CISO right here and now"? I mean, obviously, we live in our culture; it's always we want things yesterday, right? How quickly can you mobilize a VC? So can you do it within hours, within minutes, or does it take days for a client?
We have actually had quite a few. It seems to always be that way with cybersecurity. I'd say the majority of the time folks are like, "I need this yesterday," because typically they've either experienced a breach or they've gotten a scare or something like that. And so we have built our business model to be able to be agile and ramp up and down. And so we've signed contracts and started it within within a couple days. So you get we have everything really streamlined in that regard as well, so that there's not a lot of fluff involved. The only time we get held up is typically when the customer themselves have a lot of hoops that you need to jump through. But on our end, we've executed in as little as the next day.
Okay. Now, I'm looking at your website right now. I notice that you offer other services as well, too. And the one that really comes across my mind right now is the instant response. One thing I kind of want to bring up with you and with our audience is that, you know, with COVID, we've been hearing all about the Zoom bombing home issue. But one issue that really has kind of not been in limelight is that businesses are now starting to realize the importance of a BC or business continuity plan. Because, you know, obviously no one predicted the effects of this pandemic. Nobody realized the magnitude of it. And because of that, they weren't able to mobilize a workforce to a remote situation very quickly. But now, you know, CIOs, CISOs, and everybody alike, now really, we've got to have a plan in case there's another natural disaster, cyber attack, or another pandemic. So what are your thoughts on that? And do you help clients actually write the incident response, DR plan, disaster recovery, and the business continuity plans?
I'm so glad you touched on that because I think it's always been front of mind for us. We've been doing business continuity, disaster recovery plans for customers for years now. But unfortunately, it was not always taken seriously because they're usually when someone thinks of a disaster, they think of Hurricane Katrina or they think of their building burning down or something like that. And COVID has actually allowed a lot of people to gain perspective that, wow, my incident response plan is not just a natural disaster, but it's also things like a pandemic. It's also these unexplained phenomena that happen, and I need to be prepared for that. So you had millions of businesses have to essentially go remote overnight without the means to do so, and they could have easily planned for something like that well ahead of time. So, for example, COVID in particular, Health and Human Services did a whole scenario on a very similar event over a year ago. And we use that kind of information when we're building our incident response plans to kind of think outside the box and help customers plan for the macro disasters with the hopes that it doesn't come to that and they can just use a subset of their incident response plan. But having something that's agile and doesn't just sit in the document vault and is checked off once a year, that's really important to us at Third Rock and the Cyber Compass team. And so that's one thing that we've been developing and offer for our customers for a while now.
Okay, then just another question in that regard. You offer cybersecurity training. So does that mean that you help with cert training with the CISSP, or you just kind of go out to a client's place and just help them with security training in general for their company?
Yes, great question. So with cybersecurity training, what we offer is cyber awareness training, and for the employees, and especially in the healthcare space, you have employees, and then you also have the healthcare officers themselves, the HIPAA officers that have a bit more responsibility. So what we've done is we've really expanded out our training module within Cyber Compass to be able to deliver a lot of micro-sized content rather than sitting an employee down and giving them an hour-long video that they have to go through once a year. We've realized that that doesn't help. We can't take that approach. I know that there are a lot of great services out there, like the know-befores of the world, but the problem is that's exactly what they do. They make you watch 10, 20, 30-minute videos and make you do a multiple choice at the end, and that doesn't accomplish anything. It doesn't allow them to learn from that. And so what we've done is taken the opposite approach of delivering micro-sized content and then allowing the employee to take short little knowledge checks on it, recording that information so that if a client or an auditor or whatever the case may be comes back and asks for that, they can easily produce the data.
Okay. Now let's go back to your company. We talked about some customer success stories. Are there any cool stories that you all have experienced as a company? You kind of use the Texas twang down there. Are you positioning new product services? Are you entering new markets? Or do you have any M&A activity plan that you can elaborate on, which is not like, you know, proprietary information?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are working on a few things right now. So we're pretty excited. One of the big things that we've seen is cyber insurance has become very popular. That's something that has unfortunately been misconstrued in that many customers feel like, oh, I just need insurance. I don't need the associated security best practices or program. But what we found is that unfortunately now we have a lot of customers that are going through this this experience where they've experienced the breach, and then they go to their insurance providers to help them kind of with the subsequent costs, and they're not getting any help because they didn't read the fine lines. And so we're taking a different approach where we want to be able, we have a vision to be able to offer cyber insurance in addition to our risk assessment and allow those to go hand in hand. More to come on that. But the other thing that we're really excited about is that with COVID-19, unfortunately, it has created a lot of hardships worldwide, but one of the big things that we felt like we could address early on was helping companies understand the risk of having a remote workforce. But when we tried to kind of brush up on remote workforce security, we had already been playing in the space I had mentioned at the beginning of like startups and very technology-centric companies that were already working remote. We were already building zero trust frameworks and things like that for these remote employees. But what we found is that for the existing legacy organizations that maybe aren't set up for remote and have to scramble to go remote, they don't have a good way to gauge the risk of each of their remote workers. So you can conduct a risk assessment on an organization as a whole, but you can't really conduct a risk assessment on an individual worker working from their couch at home. And so what we decided to do is, after seeing that that space hadn't been played in, we decided to just make it ourselves. And so we are happy to talk about and are excited to talk about the upcoming launch of the Cyber Compass remote workforce framework and associated modules. So what we're going to be doing is creating this SaaS solution that allows an IT department to conduct risk assessments on each of their remote workers, and they go through and they'll do a few things. They'll answer a series of questions. We've got some automated scans built in, and what it will do is it will produce a risk score. And so now the IT department knows where to shine their flashlight. They know where to invest their time. They know what to do to help people enhance their security at home. And we see the implications of this being pretty immense. One, in helping the organization, but two, it also kind of reinforces the bond between the organization and the employee, because now the employee has the opportunity to enhance their cybersecurity posture at home, which goes beyond the workforce and goes beyond their employment and helps them in their personal lives as well.
Yeah, it's excellent that you bring that point up, because with the work from home issues, I know a big issue has been actually for these IT security teams to actually deploy, you know, software patches, you know, and upgrade, because of the disparate networks that are out there, how do you penetrate into in-home networks, so forth. So when do you expect your product to be out?
We are hoping, and we actually have it developed, and it's been in testing, and we've been moving along. We're actually first allowing some of our most trusted and valued clients to be able to have first dibs and provide preliminary feedback, but then we're going to be launching it here in June. So we're really excited. Like near term, we're going to be able to execute on this right when the remote workforce is hitting its peak in terms of numbers. That being said, we've also been already demoing and showing and really giving a spotlight on all the things that are coming with that module.
Okay, excellent. Congratulations on the upcoming launch here. Now let's go into the topic of cybersecurity insurance. Now, I've actually signed a book contract in which I'm going to be writing a book nothing but cybersecurity insurance and how to gauge cyber risk, you know, using statistical and mathematical modeling from a vendor-neutral approach. I'll probably start writing that book, I think, early next year. Now, cybersecurity insurance, in fact, I'll be building a whole new microsite just on that topic. I've come across that topic, and it's a very, very murky area. Now, the biggest issue that I've been finding is that just because you have a cybersecurity insurance policy does not mean that you're going to be automatically covered, right? So, for example, if I was hit with a cyber attack, if I file a claim, it doesn't mean that I'm going to get all my payout when I file that claim, right? So why is this thing such a murky area? Why can't the insurance companies come together with a uniform set of practices and standards to tell their clients? And I don't know. It seems like the very kind of like a, I don't know, something that's not really understood is just because it's so new. What are your thoughts on all that? And how can Third Rock help a client procure cyber insurance to make it easier on them?
Yeah. Well, first of all, congratulations on the book deal. That's huge. That's awesome that you'll be you're a subject matter expert in this field, so to be able to write about it and explain it is going to make a positive impact on the cybersecurity community. So in terms of why it's as convoluted as it is, there's a few reasons. So you already touched on this. Cybersecurity insurance itself is fairly new. It's only been around for about the last 20 years, so in the new millennia. And so what happened was insurance companies first and foremost saw dollar signs. And so they went and created this new service, and they send a PDF form, you answer a few questions, and boom, you have cyber insurance. But what happened was they started losing a lot of money because they were not gauging any sort of risk related to cybersecurity and compliance. And so they were not getting a really snapshot of the client's environment. And now you've heard the age-old saying of it's not if but when on cybersecurity breaches. So now insurance companies are kind of having to scramble, and they're making their policies more and more convoluted so that there are loopholes. And they know where these loopholes are. And I don't mean to – it's not – my intention to bash the insurance community. I think they're just learning as they go because this is so new. But unfortunately, there is a big gap in how cyber insurance providers offer insurance and how they gauge a customer's actual risk management posture. And so what we need to see is more cohesion between the cybersecurity professionals and the cyber insurance providers. That's what we're creating at Third Rock, is essentially being able to give basically assurance for the insurance provider to understand whether a customer has invested into their cybersecurity strategy. And so if you have a customer that's not ever paid a dime to implement the most basic of cybersecurity best practices, then those people are going to be higher risk. Those customers are going to be higher risk and therefore need to be charged a higher premium. We see it where it's going to be shifting, where customers are going to most likely be declined if they don't meet a minimum requirement. But it's not there right now, and so that's what we're trying to create. We are bridging the gap between our risk assessments and the cyber insurance, so we can help get a customer very easily to where they need to be, give the cyber insurance provider peace of mind, and then get a way better rate and more robust coverage for the customer.
Okay, excellent. Now, one of the things that I keep writing about, especially in my blog postings, are that, to be honest, we live in a reactive society, okay, here in America. We won't act on something until we're hit, and even then after we're hit, our mindset kind of goes down to a reactive level again. Now, I keep getting asked is why don't companies take a more proactive, you know, mindset to protect against cyber attacks, because it's just so obviously out there. Well, my philosophy on that is, you know, these companies think that because they haven't been hit that they won't be hit, but that's when I think that they will be hit. So it also goes to the issues of compliance and regulation. They feel that they don't have to invest in cybersecurity because, you know, they think it's just a, you know, just a bloat expense, you know, a piece of money on the IT budget. What, being a CISO, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, obviously, you have to guide Third Rock with their budgeting and everything, you know, for IT and cyber. So just from your perspective as a CISO, what are your thoughts on that?
Comes down to two things. One is basic human psychology, and out of, it's the classic saying of out of sight, out of mind. If we don't understand cybersecurity, I guess it's a combination of out of sight, out of mind, and the bike shedding effect, which is essentially when we don't feel confident talking about the something like cybersecurity, then we go focus on things that we're even half confident in talking about. Whereas we should be, just because we don't have the appropriate knowledge in place to be able to talk about cybersecurity, doesn't mean we should give up on it. And that's what a lot of customers do. They will either forget about it, or they will say it's too expensive to get a cybersecurity professional, and then it's out of sight, out of mind. But the other issue is that you touched on this, is they see it as a cost center. They see security as a cost center. So you've got a board of directors that are all very successful business leaders in their own right, and they know revenue models for their organization better than anyone. But the classic revenue model is seeing ROI on your investment. So being able to put in X amount and get Y amount. And unfortunately with security, it's backwards, because you're putting in X amount, you're not seeing the Y amount, because it's not you put in $100,000 in security and you're going to get paid $500,000. It's that you put in $100,000 of security and you have now saved yourself down the line from a breach that will equate to $500,000. And so it's not the investment of getting money back in your pocket, but saving you money down the road, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Now, to kind of go back to your company again, now, there are, I mean, who knows, there's what, 2,000, 3,000 cyber vendors out there all focusing on different aspects of cybersecurity. Why should a client come to you and say, hey, Taylor, I want your services? I mean, there's so many other SaaS providers out there. Why should they come to you first? In other words, what's your market differentiator from everybody else in the crowd?
Fantastic question. I think that our differentiator, we've approached the subtle differentiator of what we talked about before on the podcast, is that we are taking the approach of not trying to sell them on the glitz and glamour of cybersecurity like a lot of firms are doing. We are helping them with the basics. We are helping them get that compass in place, that roadmap, and providing them a robust cybersecurity program that will serve them for years to come. Rather than selling them a piece of technology that will become outdated and only addresses 1% of your cybersecurity program, let's use technology to kind of augment your entire security governance plan that will serve your company for decades. Because the idea is that technology is going to come and go, but cybersecurity elements and requirements are not. And so we really help the customers with the basics. That's what we're good at. We don't try to play in the space of AI and machine learning like I talked about. We don't want to. We want to help customers with building better cybersecurity without all the fluff, without all the costs, and just getting them to where they need to go, plain and simple.
Excellent. Now, looks as we're approaching the last main segment of our show here, I just want to touch on some cyber issues here. Now, the Internet of Things, now that's kind of that's obviously where everything's connected together, you know, in the virtual and physical world, so forth. I really don't like the idea of it, because I don't like all these interconnections, because it just increases the attack surface for the cyber attacker. Does Rock do any IoT, and do you have a smart home or smart car, or like when you clap your hands, your doors open up, your car backs up for you, it starts and all that kind of jazz?
No, I think we're all in the same camp as you. I think we're all a little leery of the more recent technologies out there. I think that the Google Homes and Alexas and whatnot are all great in their own right, but unfortunately they create a lot of vulnerabilities that cybersecurity professionals that are obsessed with it can't stop thinking about. And so, like, I'm sure you've probably already had some conversations around contact tracing, which leads to a whole different discussion entirely. But for us internally, we are getting more traction on the IoT space. We have an IoT framework that we can follow and help guide customers that maybe have a really IoT-centric environment. But the problem is that IoT manufacturers themselves are largely unsecure. So now there's a lot more work that goes into it, and you need to know how to evaluate your third-party vendors at that point that are producing these IoT devices. And that's where the expertise is really lacking internally for organizations, and that's something that we have expertise on that we guide customers on.
Yeah, that kind of brings up two other sub-issues there. I know that California passed an IoT bill, and it's a very loose and, you know, it's nobody really understands it, you know, and everything is just too broad. And the other issue that kind of relates to even using other cyber technologies is that clients or people or companies, when they buy, suppose, like a sophisticated firewall, they only use the default settings that come straight from the manufacturer. They don't take the time to actually, you know, set those thresholds to their own security environment. And that also increases the cyber risk as well, too. Have you come across any issues like that?
Oh, my goodness, all the time. I think it comes back to the basics again. They're so quick to buy, like, next-generation firewalls and SD-WAN services, but then they forget to establish the governance that goes involved with that. You need to have a person that owns that whole system. You need to have the technology configured in an appropriate way so that you are not exposing your company inherently just by having that technology. And you also need to have the processes to periodically come back and review that technology, because configurations themselves are not static. Passwords themselves should not be static. And these are things that you need to come back to on a periodic manner just to continue to address the risk. And that's what people don't understand. They think of it as like a one-and-done model. I'm going to download this software, I'm going to put all my information in the cloud or whatever it is, and they think that their problems will go away. And while they are greatly streamlined, you do need to know how to optimize that particular piece of technology. And it's the same for things like IoT and firewalls and whatnot.
Right. Well, that brings up another issue, because something I've been writing about in my blog is the mentality, I think, with overall, I mean, I'm not trying to hit the I don't mean to be, you know, pick on CIOs or anything like that, but I think overall with the C-suite, I think mentality has been, okay, we can throw out all these firewalls and all these, you know, devices, so the mentality has always been, ooh, the more we have, the better. In other words, there is that comfort, you know, safety numbers, but that actually has been that's actually backfired, because that only increases the attack surface for the cyber attacker. So I think there's a shift, and correct me if I'm wrong in my thinking, is that I think CISOs and CIOs now are kind of reevaluating, hey, we need to do a risk assessment to see where we can strategically place our devices. So as opposed to sending out simply 10 firewalls, let's do two. Let's just deploy two, but they can be deployed where they have the most impact, meaning that'll save them money, and plus, and that will get a bigger ROI, which will be better. You know, a better image for their board of directors, get more money when it's time for that. Have you dealt with an issue like that before?
Absolutely. I think we've seen that quite a bit. I think that there's a big misunderstanding in the cybersecurity space, even among CISOs, I would say, that you have this mentality of, well, I need to have like a zero trust mentality, which is that every user is kind of in their own bucket and they have to provide four pieces of identification before they can connect to our network. And so they're in their own little silo, but they apply that model to other facets of their environment where they say, okay, well, I'm going to have 10 different networks, because if someone breaches one network, they can't get into the other nine. But the problem is you're increasing your attack vector there. And then if you couple that with the inevitable shadow IT, which is essentially that there are always going to be employees in your environment that are using their own technologies, they're signing up for their own SaaS services, they're connecting their iPads to your corporate network. When you put those two things together, it's a recipe for disaster. And so we see that, unfortunately, really drive customers on a downward spiral, because they're taking that knowledge, they're taking that mindset, and they're going to their board of directors, and they're getting budgets for more tools and more systems and more things with the wrong structure in place, if that makes sense.
Okay, excellent. Now, that kind of brings up another issue. Before COVID-19 hit, one of the hot topics was, again, I don't mean to pick on this, but it was about the CISO and the CIO. I've written a number of posts on blogs on just burnout rate of the CISOs and CIO. What's, 2 years, I think, is the average tenure? You know, whenever a company took a cyber attack, the first thing is fire the CIO or the CISO. But I like to take a more holistic approach. I think the first priority should be to mitigate the risk, then do an exhaustive forensics investigation, see what happened, then point the I think the knee-jerk reaction is to, you know, fire the head of the of cybersecurity when it's really not their fault. Obviously, the buck stops at them and people like you, but I don't think it's fair. Like, what are your thoughts on that, being a CISO yourself?
Oh, unfortunately, the industry has largely been built on that form of, I guess, pessimism from board of directors. Everybody didn't care about cybersecurity. They didn't invest in it for the longest time. And then a lot of companies, unfortunately, experienced a breach because of that. And they went through hardships and they had no one to point their finger at other than the person that was supposed to be in charge of their cybersecurity strategy. The problem is that they tend to leave out the details on things like, well, they denied their budget for years. They gave them a fraction of what they needed to actually accomplish an appropriate security posture. You've got that unfortunate, reputation in the space. And then, of course, as you said, I think that a lot of companies will just have that knee-jerk reaction in that they need to show their customers they're taking this seriously, and so they're going to fire their CISO. That doesn't accomplish anything. Unfortunately, then you have companies like Equifax that took a huge brand damage hit because they fired their cybersecurity staff and they gave people free credit monitoring. Well, no one cares about that. They don't. Free credit monitoring isn't going to save that data. What they cared about was that they should have invested more into basic cybersecurity and taken a better approach to cybersecurity basics rather than taking exorbitant amounts of money in other ways that we've come to find that they had plenty of budget for security. So I guess to paint that picture holistically, we unfortunately are still moving towards the understanding that while the CISO or even the CIO are captains of your ship, of your security and compliance ship, they can't run the Titanic by themselves. And so they need crew, they need people to all be working towards one goal. And oftentimes we find that people just don't care enough about cybersecurity and they make it a very uphill battle.
Right. Okay, now finally, what do you think about critical infrastructure? There are sporadically there are news headlines about, you know, I think Texas has also been hit with some pretty huge attacks on critical infrastructure, if I'm correct, you know, like I think to your power grid and maybe your water supply. Has Texas really been hit with those kinds of things? And like, what are your thoughts on cyber attacks on critical infrastructure?
I think that we are finally starting to take critical infrastructure more seriously, but there is unfortunately still a lot of work that needs to be done in regards to that. We've had a few scares where, as you said, critical infrastructure, government-related systems have experienced breaches, and I bet that there's a lot more out there that we don't even know about. That being said, I do think that luckily things like our power grid and our water supply and all of that, those industries – those top five critical infrastructure industries have to meet a variety of requirements that go well beyond cybersecurity, but they actually intrinsically absorb cybersecurity measures into it. So redundancy, for example, having fail-safes in place, that definitely mitigates the impact that it would have. And so you'll see moments in history where entire cities will be hacked and on their power grid or their water supply. But in reality, there's never been a case in history where they have, at least to my knowledge, that they have had just like a widespread crippling impact. Typically, it's because of the inherent redundancies we have in place. That being said, I think that we need to invest a lot more in the security infrastructure for our critical industries. I think we have a long way to go. And I still think that we are seeing scarier and scarier breaches. Not Petya is a prime example that hit some very critical, I guess, companies and logistics companies, supply companies, those kinds of things that I see as being very important to our economy. And they were absolutely crippled by it. So the reason it wasn't the critical infrastructure themselves, but rather the infrastructure of the technologies that they were using globally. I guess you could identify it as critical for them, but it wasn't critical for the entire economy is what I'm trying to say. So there's a subtle difference between that I'm trying to clarify, and that there are critical infrastructure for individual companies that have a widespread impact on our economy versus government critical infrastructure that affect our quality of life.
Okay. How do you know, obviously COVID-19 has made a huge impact on our cyber threat landscape, but if you just forget about COVID for a while, how do you foresee the cyber threat landscape now evolving this year and even going to next year too?
Oh, yes. I think everybody has speculation on where it will go. I think that now more than ever, it's easier to launch ransomware attacks and phishing attempts and all kinds of malicious attacks on the organizations out there. Unfortunately, what we're seeing is that because it's so easy, you've got what the cybersecurity industry calls script kiddies, that are just kind of their own little keyboard warriors that don't really know much about hacking or cybersecurity, but they can actually cause a lot of damage simply because, I mean, you can go on the dark web and buy a ransomware package with customer support for $100. And so you've got that happening right now, coupled with something like COVID, where all millions of companies had to change their business model and their IT environment overnight, and therefore chose the technology first mindset and created a slew of potential vulnerabilities across their IT environment. So I think what we're going to see is, unfortunately, a bigger attack vector on SMBs, especially because they are typically the ones that are further behind the cybersecurity eight ball, for lack of a better term.
Okay. Our last question for the show, Taylor, is we're going to say the best for last, is what you tell – now, obviously, we all are at risk of becoming a victim, okay? There's no matter how much we do, we could become a victim. But key is how to mitigate that risk and how to be proactive in case we are hit to minimize the damage being done further. Do you have a laundry list that you tell clients or even individuals, SMBs, what they can do to help protect themselves?
Oh, that's actually, yeah, that's a great question. I think that back to what we've been talking about throughout this podcast, we always encourage companies to start with the basics. I think one of the biggest misinterpretations in the industry is that cybersecurity is hard or that it's expensive or that you need to adopt all these technologies just to have appropriate cybersecurity. And that's not necessarily the case. There are SMBs out there that only have a few folks. There's also companies that have hundreds of employees that don't have to invest in a single piece of new technology. They just have to optimize the technology they already have in place. So we really encourage customers to focus on the basics like multi-factor authentication and just basic user access management. But one of the big things we recommend to our customers specifically is we are big fans of the Center for Internet Security's Top 20. So CIS 20 has a great framework for small, medium, and large businesses. It outlines a lot of the basics, and those controls largely can be adopted in any IT environment with the technology you already have in place.
Okay. Well, Taylor, thank you very much for your time this afternoon. We really appreciate it. I think you've really hit on some really good topics there, and I think we've learned a lot more, especially about the VC. So how should potential clients, prospects, or even clients, you know, reach out to you?
Absolutely. So everyone can find the entire Cyber Compass team at cybercompass.co, so .co. We're on LinkedIn, we're on Instagram, Twitter. So we've got all the social handles. And then if they want to reach out to any of the individual team members, both myself, Taylor Hersom, are on LinkedIn. We've got Robert Phelps, who was also on the on the podcast. He is also on LinkedIn. Feel free to contact us directly and engage with us. And then finally, if they want to email us, then they can reach out directly to our CyberCompass email. Mine's just taylor@cybercompass.co. And so, would love to engage, answer questions, talk cybersecurity. And I guess the last thing I'll say is info@thirdrock.com would also be a great resource for anyone looking for more information. But we're a bunch of cybersecurity nerds, thankful to talk about it. Thank you for giving us the platform. I sincerely appreciate your time and the open dialogue.
Well, it's my honor and privilege. Thank you for your time.